Well, welcome back to HealthLink On Air, produced each week by Upstate Medical University, making the academic difference in healthcare in the Central New York community. And this is your host, Tricia Torrey, every patient's advocate. Healthcare reform. How often have you heard that topic mentioned in recent weeks? Well, this is a health show, and healthcare reform will affect all of us. So as we can, we at HealthLink On Air want to help you assess all the information that's out there to help you make up your own mind about what is or isn't important. So I expect this will be the first of many of these kinds of conversation. There may be no one better to kick them off than my guest this morning, Dr. Dave Smith, president of Upstate Medical University. Good morning, Dr. Smith.
Good morning, Trish. How are you?
And welcome back. We only bring you in for the biggest topics, and certainly healthcare reform is one of the biggest ones. It must be like the elephant in the room for almost every conversation you have.
Well, you know, it's relevant to every family. I mean, obviously, this hits every family in Central New York. It's vital for the state of New York. And to be honest, it is very important for the economic vitality of this region, because without it, we really aren't competitive when we try to bring jobs to the market or to be able to recruit and retain individuals in this region.
You know, this may be the first time almost in history of the conversation of healthcare reform that most of us have really understood that correlation between the cost of healthcare and jobs and even manufactured items and every other business that's out there.
I agree. And of course, what we also all know, besides the fact that we're ultimately all going to be patients, and we've got to put this in a personal perspective, is the fact it's the right thing to do. And if we do it correctly, and it really becomes healthcare reform rather than just medical reform or reactive medicine, we're really going to be sending the right message for the first time in this country. And by that, I mean talking about prevention, primary care, and some of the things that we're going to have to make sure are the building blocks, the girders of this new healthcare reform.
Well, I do want to get into those topics a little more in a moment. But first, I want to mention that Congressman Dan Maffei held a meeting here in Central New York just a couple of weeks ago, and he invited people to speak on various topics having to do with healthcare reform. And you were there. I don't think the outcome was quite what the congressman or perhaps you expected. Tell us about that meeting.
Well, I don't know whether or not the outcome was. I thought it was a good dialogue. I think what individuals saw, you had, I think, about 10 panel members working with the congressman on this. And as you and I just talked about, it probably would have been nice to have a patient's perspective on the panel. But it was rather a large panel. And, of course, that creates a difficulty really getting an in-depth discussion. And I think that created frustration in the audience. But my take home was is that this is a very emotional and personal issue. So I wasn't particularly surprised by the angst or the anxiety within the room. I think it's personally very understandable. In an economy that's in a downturn and a lot of people potentially losing their health care or currently on COBRA, in other words, the prolonged coverage after you lose your coverage, I can understand the anxiety in the room. So I didn't take it that way. I thought it was something we're going to see throughout the country in the debate, and we better be prepared with the right answers for those questions.
I think you're absolutely right, because if you look at what healthcare reform is, it's the two most important factors in any individual's or family's life, their health and their money. I mean, you can't get any more personal than that. Well, as I see it, there are basically three kinds of approaches to reform. One would be all public. One might be all private, and one is going to be a combination of the two. You see one direction or another taking the lead right now?
You know, I said it that evening, and you've always got to be careful, because people might interpret what you say as being your personal choice versus what you really believe pragmatically is going to happen. And I'm going to preface my comments with that again. You know, there's a lot of simpler ways perhaps to design a healthcare system, but we're going to have to build on some of the fundamentals of the existing system in place. One is we fundamentally don't have the money to do otherwise, perhaps even like a single-payer program.
Yeah, unlimited funds would make this an entirely different conversation.
And we're dealing with so many other challenges right now, and there's certainly pros and cons to every single one of these options. And individuals are passionate about those, and I certainly understand that passion. I believe personally that, like we've seen in other healthcare reform in this country and in states, we're going to see a pluralistic response. By that, I mean we're going to build on some of the public models that already exist, preserve the private payers. And I used the example that evening of a program which I think helped diagnose how we're going to approach it. It was a program we developed a number of years ago called Vaccines for Children. That program was a debate over whether or not the government would essentially buy all the vaccines and distribute them to make sure every child had access. huge public debate, single payer for children, for basically vaccines. Remember, this program was spun out of a time when we had the big measles outbreak in the early 90s, and we lost children and adults from measles, something no one ever believed could happen again, but it did, and it could happen again, by the way. So we needed to have some solutions, and we knew that access to vaccines and to guarantee a market for their development was necessary. Vaccine manufacturers, very, very concerned, wanted to see a pluralistic response, wanted to make sure there was preservation of the private purchasing of vaccines. End of the day, it was a compromise politically. In the end of the day, 55% of all vaccines are now purchased by the government with a guarantor, and about 45% of all vaccines delivered are paid for in the private sector. It ended up being a very nice balance, and manufacturers realized it was very nice at the end of the day to have a government guarantor, because when a new vaccine came out to market, they knew that there would be a market for it, because sometimes private payers will take anywhere from 6 months to a year to approve the new vaccine, even though the government and other bodies say it's the right thing to do, including pediatrics, family medicine, and others. So it turned out the compromise worked. And I think we're going to see the same thing. Again, everybody's going to have an opinion about it. My opinion is that pragmatics in the world of politics will probably rule the day. Again, whether or not I personally agree with that is another question.
Right.
But I think we also have to move on, because there's other important aspects of healthcare reform in addition to paying for it. There's coverage, there's primary care, there's prevention, there's behaviors, a lot of things that we need to talk about.
Well, let's get to some of those. And we only have a few minutes left, but let's talk about kind of top level, no matter what we're talking about, no matter how we're going to pay for it, these are some concerns we need to have. And one, let's start with that lack of primary care, because no matter what model you're talking about, you are talking about having primary care physicians rise to the top of the doctor heap, if you will pardon my cliche. So talk about primary care and how that affects medical education.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, you know, I have a little bit of a bias here. I'm a pediatrician, so I would definitely be
and
in
you're
the category
of a university
medical center and a college of medicine. But, you know, we actually do know a good bit what works. And what we don't have is this country has not had a sustainable policy. And by the way, we can't leave out nurses, nurse practitioners, and physician assistants and all this, and other allied health professionals.
When we're talking primary care, we're not just talking about doctors. We're talking about all the providers of primary
care.
And
a real team that comes together, because you want a team taking care of you when you're ill.
Yes, you do.
But let's just talk about primary care for a moment, and particularly the physician side. Upstate has actually been a leader in this area with its rural med program, with its new initiative to bring more students out of rural areas, to look at how you build incentives, actually how you build a pipeline that probably starts as far back as junior high school to build the right kind of sense about what we're looking for and the connectivity and the prestige that one can find within primary care. The greatest rate limiting issue on primary care is more and more of these young professionals are coming out with increasing debt load within their medical school and undergraduate years in education. Sometimes an averaging well over $150,000 to $160,000, and people will say, well, but they're going to make a lot of money. Well, they do in a relative sense, but even in primary care in this state, you know, they may start out at $125,000 to $130,000 a year. And again, a lot of people listening are going, wow.
That's a lot of money.
Sure. And it is. But if you look at the comparative data where they could go into dermatology or surgery perhaps or radiology, and that figure could be, you know, in the $700,000 to $800,000 range, it's all relative to them. And we can certainly, again, put our values on this discussion, but it won't work for them.
And if you have loans to pay back, and if you want to pay your mortgage, and you want to send your kids to college, you're looking at a higher income.
Well, and also, as we know, many of them don't get out until they're almost 30 years of age.
Yeah.
So they're already moving on down their life, and they really would like to have in a position to do the things we just discussed.
Primary care also ties into prevention. And I think prevention is a real important part of what we're talking about in healthcare reform.
Well, it is. And I was just going to add, by the way, that we're going to need to see the payers, including Medicaid, Medicare, and the private payers, value primary care.
Yes.
There is going to have to be a value, and that's a good lead-in to prevention as well. We're going to have to put it in the forefront. I mean, most of the time in the articles we see are about some exotic new device, disease, or a way for us to treat it. We're going to have to get to the fundamentals of health. That primary care is the place where you can intercede on diabetes, asthma, certainly issues related to the risks of stroke and cardiovascular disease and cancer. These are the big killers.
Absolutely.
And the right intersection for the behaviors is to have the access to a primary care provider. Again, could also be a nurse practitioner or a physician assistant or others. But the system is not set up currently to measure their ability to intercede. And number two, most importantly, the incentives are not in place, i.e. financially and or in the world of prestige, to reinforce once we as medical schools produce more of them to be able to sustain that. We're talking a lot of sustainability these days. Mm-hmm. There's a fundamental break in the policy. And unless that changes in Washington this time around, this will be just rhetoric.
I agree. And also, you know, going back to what you were saying, you can't produce more of them until that changes. I mean, it's a cycle. When they are improving the reward system, it will be easier for you to produce more of them from the universities. Let's just cover very quickly. Pre-existing conditions is also something we're talking about, and that's something that affects a lot of our listeners, I'm sure. This has got to be addressed with healthcare reform.
Well, it does. And of course, again, it's a chronic disease burden in general and the aging population. And of course, people working longer now with the down economy, these are going to become more problematic. And we're going to have a way to make sure that we have continuity of care as well as the ability to cover pre-existing and or chronic conditions. And not all of this has to be what it is today, which is often out of pocket. And that is the first dollar out of your pocket for these pre-existing.
Well, it's out of pocket or it's bankruptcy.
Right.
And that happens way too frequently. You know what? This conversation could go on probably for another hour. I don't know that our listeners could stick it out. I'd instead like to ask you to come back when you can to talk more about healthcare reform.
Well, I'd be delighted to do that. And again, I think the thing we all have to remember, we're ultimately all going to be patients. And this needs to be personalized. But at the same time, think about how we can be active in debate and substantive at the same time. I believe we do have to do something. We're at a crossroads with a changing demography of this state and country. More and more we're seeing, obviously, an aging population, chronic disease, and, of course, more disparities relative to our demographic changes, Latino, Hispanic, certainly our Indian population and others.
You know, I hope that one of the big things is that we move from the fighting to the collaborating. I think that that would go a long way. Well, Dr. Dave Smith, thank you so much for coming by this morning. Hopefully we'll see you again soon.
We will be happy to do that.
And listeners, we do need to take a break. We'll be back shortly. Please stay with us. This is Upstate Medical University's HealthLink on air on 570 WSYR.